Welcome to Have Guitar Will Travel, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine, with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies, and today I'm speaking with guitarist Tinsley Ellis. In our conversation, Tinsley tells us about living in Atlanta and growing up in Florida. Tinsley talks a bit about mandolins being used in blues music and the mandolin he uses. Tinsley describes seeing the Beatles on TV in 1964 and how that lit a fire in his love of music. Tinsley discusses his guitar heroes, Johnny Winter, Dickie Betts, and B.B. King, who he had the opportunity to see at an early age, and Albert Collins, who he eventually got to play with. Tinsley takes us through his gear, including the acoustic guitars and mandolin he uses now, and the electric guitars and amps that he has at home that he used to use. Tinsley explains his trajectory in music, playing at theme parks in the Georgia Heat and clubs on the East Coast, and eventually getting a deal with Alligator Records. Tinsley describes what touring is like for a solo musician at the age of 68, and what he does to keep fresh and in shape. To find out more about Tinsley, you can go to his website, TinsleyEllis.com. That's TinsleyEllis.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Oh, and hey, if you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon at Patreon.com. Have Guitar Will Travel podcast. Here's my buddy Tinsley.
Hey there, Tinsley.
Hey, good to see you.
Nice to see you.
Hey, where are you located?
I am in Napa, California.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. How about yourself?
Atlanta, Georgia.
What part of Atlanta?
Over by Emory University, Claremont Road.
Okay.
Briarcliff Road. Okay. Inside the perimeter.
Okay. Very good.
Inner city.
Yeah. How's the weather there right now?
It's real polleny and hot.
Yeah. Oh, it's hot.
Yeah, it's 80 something degrees. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Kinda,
wow.
Yeah, kind of hot.
Yeah. Are you used to the humidity and the heat?
After 68 years, yes, I am.
Okay, good. Yeah. Hey, have mandolins been used in blues music like on a regular basis?
Yes, they have been over the years, but not much. You know, Sleepy John Estes and Yank Rochelle. Jimmy Page.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, one of the best. Yeah. Or maybe John Paul Jones played.
Probably John Paul Jones, I'm getting it. Yeah.
One of those two guys, or maybe both of them played on different songs. They probably each. Yeah.
I saw them at the Oakland Coliseum, their last date.
I wish I had. Never got to see him.
And they did an acoustic set, and John Paul Jones had the three-necked instrument that had a guitar. I'm not sure what it, I think it was a 6 and 12 strings guitar, and then a mandolin on the top. And Jimmy Page played a Gibson A mandolin for a short. It was probably the electric mandolin. I'm gonna guess the Gibson A series electric mandolin.
Yeah, I've just got a cheapo because I can only play three songs on mandolin, and they're all three on the album.
So. What is the brand?
It's a Washburn.
That was okay. All right.
Yeah, just an inexpensive one. It, you know, sounds pretty good.
Yeah,
it's good enough.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounded great on the record.
Thank you.
Yeah, and so growing up, was blues your music right out of the gate, or were you a rock person for a short period of time? Or,
well, I don't remember much before the Beatles. I saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Uh-huh.
I would have been 6 going on 7 years old. Okay. So that was 1964.
Yeah.
But the only kind of rock and music I remember before the Beatles would have been like, you know, that I can even remember would have been like Elvis Presley. Sure. or maybe The Ventures,
yeah.
You know, kind of surf music.
Yeah.
And then the Beatles came out in 64, and it just, you know, that was a real aha moment.
Sure.
It was guitar after that, and it hadn't changed.
And did you get a guitar right after that, or did it take some time?
I did what a lot of kids did that very next week, is beg their parents for a guitar. And my parents said that they would rent me a guitar with the caveat that I would take some guitar lessons, right?
Yeah.
So they rented me an acoustic guitar, and once a week I went up and took guitar lessons from this older guy, and I think I took maybe 3 or 4 lessons, and then I release myself on my own recognizance. And
wow.
So I'm completely self-taught. I'm a keg party jammer.
And so it's self-taught, like, I mean, and were you picking stuff off of records, or were you just,
oh yeah,
just figuring it out?
Yeah, picking it off records. And then, you know, that was before the internet and before instructional videos. So if you wanted to learn something, you'd have to find somebody that was older than you.
Yeah.
They would have the patience and the willingness to sit down with you and show you stuff.
Yeah.
But my parents had an old stereo set that ended up in my room somehow, and it had a setting for half speed, sure, like 17 RPM.
Yeah, yep.
And so I'd put the Johnny Winter album on there and knock it down to half speed. That way you're still playing in the key of the song.
Yes, absolutely.
But you could work on the bends, you know, the Mike Bloomfield or Johnny Winter or Allman Brothers stuff, you know, and slow it down. And I just, that's kind of how I was able to pick stuff off of records. That and like I said, talking to somebody that was older than me and just showing me some stuff.
Yeah. And was Johnny Winter one of your guys? Was he one of the...
Yeah, definitely. Johnny Winter was... I remember when he first came out, around 1970 or something like that. And it was the big one. It was a really big splash. I mean, some of the biggest splash there was, really. And at the same time, I think there were some guitar magazines coming out, and I would buy those at the stores.
Yep.
And he'd be in there, and... you know, and Dickie Betts.
Sure.
So that's kind of a way to learn. Another way to learn was those early guitar magazines.
Sure, sure. Were your parents musical at all?
Not really. We had, you know, church music kind of crammed down our throat as kids and stuff like that. And that counts because in the South, you know, there's a big tie-in between gospel and church music, and some of the gospel music was a little rootsy, you know, mountain music and bluesy, even some blue notes in there.
Born in Atlanta, but you lived in South Florida. Were you in the middle of South Florida, or were you on the coast?
Way down there at the bottom,
near
Miami, Hollywood, Florida, which is in between Lauderdale and Miami, And that's when I first got to see some of the bands I really liked. And even before I got to see rock bands, I saw B.B. King did a teen show at a hotel down there.
Oh, wow.
B.B. was booked at the Marco Polo Hotel right there on A1A in North Miami Beach, and booked there for a week. And if you played there for a week, you had to do something. I'm sure the bands hated doing this, but on like the Saturday or the Sunday afternoon of their week-long engagement, they had to do a teen matinee.
Wow.
Where they shut down the bar and teenagers could come in there and hear the featured attraction for the bar. Pretty cool for us. But like I said, I'm sure the bands groaned about having to do that. But BB played, and I saw that because I had some older... One of my friend's older brother told me about B.B. King and said I needed to see him. If I liked Mike Bloomfield and Johnny Winter, I better go see him. And Cream, you know. And so I saw B.B. and it was a real aha moment, you know. And seeing the real blues for the very first time was a real aha moment. And he greeted us in the lobby and talked to us. He was so friendly. Wow. And shortly after that, went to see Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters and anybody bluesy that would come through, and rock and roll music too, you know, Allman Brothers, of course. And so basically I was able to really, especially with the blues people, like sit right at their feet, you know, almost touch them, Howlin' Wolf and Muddy and BB And then when I got with Alligator Records in the 1980s, I was able to go to Chicago and play with some of my heroes, you know, Otis Rush and Buddy Guy and Albert Collins. And nobody could cut Albert Collins. I mean, we all tried. Literally all the guitar players would line up at the side of the stage and he'd call us all up one at a time and he would just slice and dice us.
Wow.
Nobody could cut Albert Collins. What a vicious guitar player. And what a sweet little guy he was, too. You know, had a totally different sound than he you know, than he was off stage. Off stage, he's kind of soft spoken and kind of a hippie guy. And yeah, and you know, it saddens me that they're all gone now. You know, except for Buddy Guy, they're all gone. And you know, Buddy Guy is on probably the longest retirement tour I've ever heard of in my life. And he's, and which is good. I hope he stays on stage sure. forever, but they're all gone. And it saddens me, you know, I'm just glad I saw him while I could, mostly absolutely. In the '70s.
Yeah. Yeah. What were you playing? So your mom rented you that guitar. Was it a nylon string? Like everybody
oh,
else?
I don't even remember. I don't even remember. I know that my parents were hoping I'd grow out of it, but you know, it didn't, that sure didn't happen. And yeah. I went from that to you know, working odd jobs. And then I had a Univox Les Paul copy
sure.
for a Silvertone amp.
All right.
And I mean, that sounds like a pretty good Delta Blues rig right there, yeah. but I worked my way up and it started playing for money. You know, when I was a teenager and also had a job washing dishes at a restaurant yeah. and saved up and got myself a Les Paul and a twin reverb
wow.
and just went off on the Allman Brothers thing as big as I could, you know, because growing up in Florida and Georgia like I did, they were our favorite band.
Yeah.
I went to see them every chance I could get. I was a little too young to see Duane Allman, but I remember when Chuck Lavelle joined the band and uh-huh. and they had their big success with, Jessica and Ramblin' Man and stuff like that. And so I got on board with them and started seeing them in the early 70s. But it was after Duane and Barry passed. So uh-huh. and I'm still all about the Allman Brothers band and all things Allman, you know,
yeah.
Warren and Derek and
sure.
yeah. all of them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And so you had the Les Paul and the Fender Twin.
Did yep.
you, were you joining bands in high school and stuff? Were you out playing?
Oh yeah. I mean, I started off, you know, like a lot of us is the designated rhythm guitarist.
Okay.
And stuff like that, and then worked my way up to where I was, you know, playing as the only guitarist, and then went off to college here in Atlanta, and that's when I really was able to, out on my own and really able to start playing professionally. And one of the first, even though I played in some of the clubs and college type things, one of the first things I did was I took a job at a theme park here, Six Flags Over Georgia.
Sure.
And we had to play 9 sets a day in polyester, matching polyester suits. And we're doing, you know, Eagles and Skynyrd and
wow.
you know, and stuff that, you know, they call that classic rock for a reason, you know. It really is an unsurpassed era.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't be able to play popular music right now. First of all, I wouldn't know what it was unless somebody told me. But back then, it was really, really clear.
Oh yeah.
And I did that, and then got out of college and immediately got hired by some older guys, and they had a band called the Alley Cats, and we started playing up and down the East Coast and talking about making recordings, and we auditioned for Capricorn Records at one point, and they promptly went out of business. I was able to actually do an album for Capricorn in their second configuration in the 1990s.
Okay.
But and just kind of paying my dues until I got with Alligator Records in 1988, and that was really the turning point of my career.
Uh-huh.
Being able to play all over the world.
Wow. And did they offer you tour support and stuff? And was it a full band or is it just you and a...
No, it was back then I had a band, usually a quartet with either another guitar player or a keyboardist, usually an organist or something, and doing the full band thing. And I did an album basically since the early 80s, I put out an album pretty much every other year. So I've got about... I don't know, 25, 26 albums out at this point.
Right on. How did it work that you got the attention of Alligator?
Well, I had made some albums, four albums with a band I was in Atlanta called the Heart Fixers. And we mainly recorded, on a really small label, a jazz label, for our very first album. And then we got with Landslide Records. And that brought me to the attention of Alligator. And I kind of had to talk him into it, because at the time in the 1980s, they didn't really have any kind of long hair blues people like me. They had some guys like Johnny Winter and Roy Buchanan, but they were already famous, but they didn't have any. And they took a chance, and I did the album, and basically I've been with them for the most, the almost the better part of 40 years, with a few excursions to other labels for one reason or another. And I had my own label for a while. Now I'm back with Alligator, and I've kind of come full circle, and I'm performing and recording acoustic blues now, acoustic blues and folk music.
Yeah. And so when you go out and perform now, is it just you and an acoustic guitar?
It's me and my old Martin and my old 1937 National Steel guitar.
Okay.
And the mandolin occasionally, I'll bust that out for a tune.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like that's what I could do that for the rest of my life. But if I were to try to, have a band, it's hard to talk. I'm in my, well into my 60s. It'd be hard to talk people my own age into, dropping everything and traipsing all around the globe. So I'd probably have to have like really young guys with me, I just don't want to be like Ray Charles yelling at my band all the time. And, which is what he did. He had a band of people his own age, and then all of a sudden it was guys right out of music school, and it brought out the worst in him. And certainly being a band leader brings out the worst in me. So now there's nobody to be mad at but myself, and I really enjoy the doing the acoustic stuff and talking about how I wrote some of the songs, I just love the sound of especially that Martin, it just sings. Although people seem to favor the resonator, the steel body guitar, more, because it's a thing, and that's my slide guitar.
Yeah. And the Martin, what model and what year is it?
Well, I bought it in the early 70s from a music store in Hollywood, Florida, where I grew up. And they said, you got to have this guitar. It's a 1969, the last year of Brazilian rosewood. You've got to have this guitar. I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
And so I got it. And then last year, I thought, well, maybe I'm going to look up the serial number on it. It's a 1972. And so all these years I've been talking about it, but it doesn't really change the way I feel about it. It's definitely seasoned. And so it's my confession. It's a 1972, and it's not the final year of rosewood. Although the guitar is beat up to hell and back, it looks like it could be from the 1950s or something.
Yeah, yeah. And is it
D35?
D35.
I just love it.
Yeah, yeah, of course. And what about guitars at home? Do you have other guitars that you don't take out on the road?
Got all my electric guitars.
What are those?
I got a 59 Strat.
Wow.
And I've got a 67 ES-345.
Wow.
Okay. Similar to what Freddie King would have played. And yeah. I love those two. Those are the two main ones. But I got a couple of Les Pauls, some more Strats, Telecaster, a Gibson Modern, which is the funny looking.
Yeah.
With the Gumby headstock. Yes. That's always tuned to open D. That's my slide guitar.
And right on.
And I got old amps, Blackface and Tweed, and I sold my Twin Reverbs, and I sold my Marshall. I just didn't feel like, not going to get the big call from the Allman Brothers or anything, so I don't need those amps.
Well, when the call comes, you can always go out and find, something.
Well, right. That's when the call does come, is when you sell something. But Yeah, that's experience for you. You get experience right after you needed it, you know. And I still love recording electrically. It's just the thought of putting a band together, it just doesn't enter my mind. I did that for 50 years, and wow. I feel like I put in my dues, and now I can be a. I'm not sure what I do. It's blues and folk music and acoustic versions of songs I wrote, and I just love the sound of acoustic and being able to turn the show on a dime if I sure. want to just throw in a Bob Dylan or a Buddy Holly song or a Greg Allman song, throw it in there, do whatever the hell I want, you know. And so I enjoy that, and enjoy the listening room circuit that I'm on now.
That was just what I was going to ask. So do you have an agent that books you in these
places? Oh yeah, I just did 40 shows all the way from the Northeast to the album came out in January, and I hit the road, did a show in Atlanta the night the album came out, and I hit the road, and I've already done 40 shows all the way from the Northeast to California, and I've got some more, a little bit more touring to do, and then I guess I'll just, you know, I did that all in a car too, by the way.
Wow.
It drove the whole thing, which is not normal behavior for a 68-year-old man, but two guitars in a car, that's what we call the tour.
And was it just you, or did you bring, do you have like...
Just me.
No road manager, no...
No, just me driving and stewing in my own juices, you know, cooking up resentments and stuff as I drive along.
And wondering about the routing and why they chose the routing they chose?
Well, my phone tells me where to go. Yeah. I have to let the machine speak, and if I don't, I pay the price, you know.
Yes, exactly.
It knows how to... It knows which roads to take.
Yeah. And what do you, so when you, so you're going to go out here in just a few, like 2 weeks in April, but what do you do when you're at home, and are you writing songs? Are you reading books? Are you going out and listening?
Yeah, I practice every day. I've got a routine, because especially with that resonator guitar with the big strings on it, if I don't keep my calluses up, I pay the price. I mean, that thing is a cheese grater, really. I mean, and it'll tear my hands up. So I keep my chops up every day with a, you know, a good hour or so in the morning with my morning coffee, and I should be writing some songs. I've got the, you know, because it's time to start thinking about another album.
Sure.
But I've got a few I listened to the other day. I have them on a file in my telephone. I put them on and listened and thought, well, you know, I've got maybe half of an album, you know. So I got to go out and do some living, some research, you know, and come up with some more tunes, and also a good amount of listening too. You know, I need to check out some stuff going on and see whether I want to maybe add more percussion into the sound, you know.
Sure. Yeah,
and that's I think that's going to be something that I do over time, is adding more, you know, percussion stuff in there, and so I'm you know, right now I'm just fresh off this tour, so I'm kind of licking my wounds and going through my mail and stuff like that, and reconnecting with my homies here in Atlanta, and so it's kind of too soon for me to. be writing, but when those songs come, you know, and sometimes they do in the weirdest places. I've got a recording thing on my cell phone, and I'm always singing into it, you know, and so I can remember. And so I'm, you know, working on songs that way.
Yeah, like outside of music, what are you doing?
Well, got a house here in Atlanta, so you know, when you got a house, it's always something.
Yes,
it is always something. And you know, looking out the window now, and the yard's looking pretty rough, and my neighbor's yards are looking kind of buff, and my yard not looking too good, so I need to address that, you know. Stuff like that, normal things. I don't want to be the scourge of the neighborhood. I mean, I probably already am with all the loud sounds that have come out over the years, but I need to work in the yard. So
Do you think playing music and, you know, touring and everything, do you think it keeps you young and keeps your spirit young?
It definitely is good to keep the blood flowing. You know, it was sad, but, you know, B.B. King really didn't live very long after he got off the road.
Yeah.
And he had fallen on stage, and I think everybody realized it was a good time for him to, you know, to cut back, and he went home, and he didn't live very much longer. And so, yeah, the music thing keeps the blood flowing. Yeah. I don't know what I would do without it. I mean, eventually I'll have to, you know, do without it, but I still...
Yeah,
I feel like I've got something to say, you know, and yeah, I've got a new album out, so so it's a good time to be out there beating the bushes. And but right now, I'm not even thinking in terms of, you know, hanging it up or anything.
No, of course not. And if people want to get a hold of you, their website is tinsleyellis.com.
Yeah, and all the social media stuff. I got a couple Facebook pages.
Uh-huh.
And I got the tinsleyellis.com and Instagram. Yeah. And
are you running those pages, the Facebook pages and the socials and stuff?
Alligator does a lot of the stuff on there, and they do it really well.
Yeah.
They got a guy that's, he knows his way around social media and keeps up with all the trends and stuff like that. On my personal page, you know, I'll post pictures or music videos. I posted a Skip James music video today, and maybe I'll take a picture of a piece of pizza somewhere and put it on there. That kind of stuff. That's, you know, stuff that actually, you know, matters. But
here's the thing: people don't realize that Atlanta's got great pizza.
Atlanta's got good pizza, but you know the worst slice of pizza I ever had wasn't that bad, you know?
Yes, exactly.
And if you're hungry enough, you know, and they call it a pizza, you know, you'd be at a gas station eating a slice or something. And, but, yeah, Atlanta's got some real good pizza for sure.
What are your thoughts on boiled peanuts?
Well, I wouldn't want to make a meal out of them, you know.
It's kind of
like drinking, you know. Once you get started, you can't stop. I think the salt they put in there, you know, keep you coming back for more.
Yeah, it just tastes like mush to me.
Well, it's got a lot of boiling water and salt and peanuts. You know, you gotta help a peanut out if you're just gonna eat it raw, you know, with no salt on it or something.
Yeah,
it's not gonna really leave you wanting more.
Well, it's been wonderful talking to you, Tinsley. I appreciate your time, and I wish you the best of luck and safe travels here in April, and I hope I get an opportunity to meet you in person.
Yeah, I'll be out there again probably later in the year. I was there in November, and I'll come back out later in the year.
Good. I'll make a point of coming out and seeing you.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Have Guitar Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com, and I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.